The following message is brought to you by MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church. We are many stories made one family by one gospel. If you would like to connect with us, please check out our website at MacArthurBoulevard.org.
Go ahead and grab a seat this morning. So this Sunday will be our final message in this, what was going to be a January, now a first day of February mini-series entitled A Disciple's Treasure. Next Sunday, we're going to resume our journey through the book of Exodus together. I'm eager and excited to do that. I don't know, probably because I've just been living in Exodus for so many months now. Exodus 35 is the text that the Lord put on my heart for the final message of this stewardship series for us this morning. Certainly when we come to Exodus 35, I don't know when we'll get there in our Exodus series, probably many months from now, but when we get there, we'll give it a more thorough treatment, really looking at how it fits into the overall narrative of the book of Exodus. But this morning, I want us to consider this chapter, this text, in light of what God is doing in this season of our church. We've been talking about this the last few weeks. Pastor Travis mentioned it earlier, that we want to invite you all to come back this afternoon for a special family meeting that we're going to be talking about Forward in Freedom, which is simply a debt retirement initiative that we believe that God has for our church in this season. So I just want to reiterate that to you. If you're a member, a part of this church, please make plans to come back this afternoon, hear about the need and how we believe God is inviting our church to address that need. Because the reality is, we'll talk about this more this afternoon, is we do have a need as a church. And in one sense, the need is an earthly need. It's a practical need. It's a financial need. We have debt obligations that we need to pay off. And yet, like any other earthly need, it carries spiritual implications. Because as the people of God, we are stewards, right? We have a responsibility to steward the resources that God entrusts us, as well as stewards of the ministry of the gospel. And our assignment is to steward in light of or in alignment with the heart and the purposes of God. And so as we look at this particular need of debt retirement, you know, one reason we have felt this particular need in this season is because of some really cool and good things that God has been doing in the life of our church over the past several years. God has given us, as a church family, just some incredible open doors and opportunities to be on mission with Him, to be engaged in kingdom ministry, local and abroad, to send missionaries, to plant churches, and we want to follow Jesus in these kingdom purposes that He has for us, and we want to steward our resources for those purposes, which has led us to a place where we recognize we need to pay off debt obligations in order to free up resources for kingdom ministry for many years to come. And honestly, as one of your pastors, I'm thankful that we have a need like this. I'm thankful that we have need, not because I'm thankful for our church to be in need in and of itself, but because anytime the people of God face an earthly need, there is always an opportunity in that need to experience the glory of God. And that's true for a church, that's true for an individual. Every need that you face is an opportunity to have your heart more fully transformed by God's glory and to see God's glory. And so why Exodus 35 to kind of close out this series? Well, in Exodus 35, God's people, Israel, faced a need of their own. God had instructed them to build this structure, this tent, this tabernacle. It would be this physical, portable structure where God's glory would dwell, where they would go and worship God, where they would encounter the manifest presence of God, where God's glory would be revealed and displayed to all of the surrounding nations around Israel, which is an incredible purpose, right? It's a kingdom purpose, the glory of God encountered, the glory of God exposed. But pursuing that kingdom purpose for Israel required certain earthly resources. Very practically, they needed building materials. They needed earthly materials in order to meet this need, to build this structure. Now, last Sunday we were all at home freezing our tails off. Two Sundays ago, we looked at a disciple's generosity, and we looked at that more from an individual perspective, how I, as an individual disciple of Jesus, should practice generosity as an application of the law of love, loving God supremely and loving people selflessly. This morning, I want us to think more in the category of a community of the redeemed. How do the redeemed people of God collectively meet needs that God puts before them? How do we come together when there's a need as the redeemed people of God and together meet these types of needs? That's what we see in Exodus 35. I'll just reset the context for you briefly. At this point in the book of Exodus, God has already, spoiler alert for our Exodus series, he's redeemed them out of slavery in Egypt. He actually gets them out, okay? If you were on the edge of your seat wondering, is he going to get them out of that place? He does. He's already redeemed them out of Egypt. He has entered into a covenant relationship with them wherein he has given them covenant instructions for how they are to live as his redeemed people. Those instructions included certain moral and civil laws. They included a priesthood. They included offering certain sacrifices and holding certain festivals. And they included building a particular structure known as this tabernacle. After he gave them those instructions, they wander in the wilderness for a while. There's a really unfortunate golden calf incident where they break the covenant and rebel against God. But then even after that, through Moses' mediation, God renews his covenant with the people. And now that he's done that, he is restating, he's re-articulating many of those covenant instructions that he had already communicated previously before the golden calf incident. And that's what's happening here in chapter 35. He is telling them again about the need to build this tabernacle, how they're supposed to do it, and how they are to come together to provide the resources that are needed to build it. So look at chapter 35, verse 4. It says, "Then Moses said to the entire Israelite community, 'This is what the Lord has commanded. Take up an offering among you for the Lord. Let everyone whose heart is willing bring this as the Lord's offering.'" And then he has a colon there, and it goes on to list all of the materials, the resources that they would need to construct this tabernacle, okay? So they needed financial resources, if you will. They needed earthly materials, but he wants them to bring not just a financial offering. Look at verse 10, drop down to verse 10. He says, let all the skilled artisans among you come and make everything that the Lord has commanded. So in other words, don't just bring your stuff, don't just bring your goods, also bring your skills. Bring the craftsmanship that I have given you. And then after giving all of these instructions, drop all the way down to verse 20, he gives the instructions. This is the outcome. It says, verse 20, then the entire Israelite community left Moses' presence. Everyone whose heart was moved and whose spirit prompted him came and brought an offering to the Lord for the work on the tent of meeting, for all its services, and for the holy garments. In other words, they obeyed the instructions they had received. They heard the instructions and they obeyed what the Lord said. Now, how did God intend for this need to be met in Israel? It's clear in the text that he intended to meet this need through the free and generous gifts of the, and it uses this phrase, of the entire Israelite community. He emphasizes that phrase, entire Israelite community, in verse 4, and then again in verse 20. Now, here's a question. Could God have erected a tabernacle for himself in heaven, completely independent of the people of Israel? You know, just kind of built it himself, and then like a massive crane lowering a beam onto a construction site, just kind of lowered the tabernacle out of heaven and set it down there for the people of Israel. Could God have met the need in that manner? Of course he could, right? This is the God who created the entire universe literally out of nothing. He certainly could have created a tent, a portable tent, out of nothing. But what we learn in Exodus 35 is an important principle that you see running all throughout the narrative of Scripture about how God chooses to operate and work and meet needs on earth. He often works on earth through human agency. He chooses, more specifically still, oftentimes to meet needs, to work, to operate on earth through the agency of his redeemed people. Let's get something very clear in our own hearts and minds. God is able to accomplish his purposes on earth entirely independent of us. He does not need us in order to fulfill his purposes, build his church, fulfill his mission. He is capable. He is able in himself, self-sufficient for all of these things. But in his benevolence, in his mercy, in his kindness, he allows his children to participate in what he does on earth, which allows us to experience his glory in a unique way. Men, when you were a little boy, was there ever a time in which your dad was building something and he let you participate? He, you know, at the end of the project, he handed you the drill. Maybe not the drill, depending on your age, handed you the screwdriver. And he said, here, you put in the last screw. Here, you sand down this last edge. Now, he did that not because he wasn't able to do it on his own. He did that because he wanted to allow you the glorious experience of participating in that which what he was doing, to make that connection, to participate in his craftsmanship, in his work. This is what our Father in heaven does for us, right? God works on earth through the gifts and services offered by every member of his redeemed community. That's exactly what we see happening right here in Exodus 35. Israel needed resources. They needed these resources to build the tabernacle, and God met that need, not apart from the people, but through the people, by stirring the hearts of the people to give what they had to meet that need. What an incredible blessing that was. Like, from that point forward, these Israelites would look at that tent of meeting. They would look at that tabernacle filled with the fiery, manifest presence of God, the glory of God, and they would see their yarn. They would see their goat skins. They would see their acacia wood. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, Sophelia, but we'll go with that. They would see their gold as a part of what God used to display his glory on earth. What an incredible gift and blessing. What we see is God does the same thing today. He invites us to bring our ordinary gifts. For them, it was ordinary wood. It was ordinary goat hair. It was ordinary dyes. He invites us to bring our ordinary gifts, and he uses it for his glorious purposes. Not because he needs us, but because he is kind and gracious to allow us to experience his glory by participating in what he's doing on earth. Now, as we continue to examine chapter 35 from Exodus, we're gonna glean some insights from this chapter about how a redeemed community, as we are the church, we are the redeemed community in the new covenant, how a redeemed community comes together and offers resources, offer skills to meet needs on earth. The question is, how does a church collectively practice generosity in order to meet earthly needs? That's the question. And the first answer to that question that we see in Exodus 35, the first principle that we glean is this. Number one, together we give from restful hearts, trusting God's provision. We give from restful hearts, trusting God's provision. That's what God is teaching Israel here. You know, I almost didn't even think about this. The only reason I thought of it is because it's in the text. You can't skip the first three verses of chapter 35. Well, he's talking about the Sabbath there. We could skip that and jump to the offering. No, he starts with the Sabbath command. Before he launches into the instructions to take up this offering, he reminds Israel of the command to practice the rest of the Sabbath, this day of Sabbath to the Lord. Why does he start there? Why does he devote three verses of the chapter to talk about Sabbath? Well, it makes sense if you think about it, because a part of the purpose of the Sabbath was to train the hearts of God's people to trust his provision, right? Like, think about, like, put yourself in the shoes of an ancient Israelite living in an agrarian society. Why would you be tempted to break the Sabbath and work on the seventh day? you would be tempted to break it and to work because your survival depended upon your work. Your work of the ground, your care of the livestock. I've got to work. I can't take a day off. Or we don't eat this season or next. So what does God do? He commanded them, no. I'm giving you this gift of the Sabbath. You're going to take a day of rest. And you are going to, in that day of rest, learn to trust my provision for you. You're going to learn that it depends not upon your work, but upon my hand. He intends to teach them, okay? Think about where they're coming from. You are no longer slaves who have to work 7 days a week for your own survival, to pacify your taskmasters. Your identity has changed now. You are now my son. And as my son, you can rest. You can rest in my provision. He wants them to understand our relationship is not going to be based upon the work that you do for me. That's a life of slavery. I brought you out of that relationship. I'm not your taskmaster. I'm your father. Our relationship is going to be based upon what I will do for you. And so you're going to rest on the seventh day. You're going to keep the Sabbath. And so that's where chapter 35 begins. It begins here because even when we are giving ourselves to the work of the Lord, like building a tabernacle, taking up an offering, God intends for our ministry and our gifts to be given from hearts of rest, hearts that trust their Father's provision. Okay, when we give a gift to God, whether it is a financial gift, whether it's a gift of service, a gift of ministry, a gift of craftsmanship, when we give a gift to God, we are releasing that gift. We are releasing that money. We are releasing that time. And we release it trusting that God is going to provide for everything that we need. We give from restful hearts because we're giving not as slaves who have to worry about our own survival. If I give this gift, can I make ends meet later in the month, later in the year? No, that's not your identity. We give as sons at rest in the Father's love and provision for us. And the same is true in our giving, as we give even to the church, whether it's our regular giving of tithes and offerings, or it's giving beyond that in a special offering to meet a specific need. Our giving as the people of God should never be frantic. Okay, it should never be fearful. Our giving should never reek of desperation. We should never have the mindset that says, I can't give what God has put on my heart to give because if I release that gift, I might not have enough. No. Nor should we embrace the mindset that says, I have to give at least this much or God's mission will fail. Both mindsets are marked by fear. And people of God don't give from a mindset or a heart of fear. We don't give out of fear. We give at rest, with restful hearts, trusting our Father's provision. This is how a redeemed community gives to meet needs. Restful hearts, trusting the provision of God. And not only do we give from restful hearts, but what we see secondly in Exodus 35 is that we give from willing hearts. Willing hearts. This is number two. Together we give from willing hearts in response to God's grace. In response to God's grace. It's hard to miss it in the text because he repeats it so frequently. He says it in verse 5. And then he repeats himself in verse 21, verse 22, verse 26, and then just in case we missed it, he repeats it again in verse 29. Look at chapter 35, verse 5. He says, "Let everyone whose heart is willing bring this as the Lord's offering." Drop down to verse 21. He says, "Everyone whose heart was moved and whose spirit prompted him came and brought an offering to the Lord." Look down at verse 29. He says, "So the Israelites brought a freewill offering to the Lord. All the men and women whose hearts prompted them to bring something for all the work that the Lord through Moses had commanded to be done." In other words, this was not a tax on the people that was required of them by way of legality and law. It was really important to God that in the construction of his house, in the building of this structure where his glory would dwell, that contributions toward that end would be heart gifts. That they be contributions that flow out of a willing, thankful, grateful heart. When God's people give to the ministry of God, whether it's a financial gift, whether it's a gift of service and time, we make that offering as an expression, a willing expression of our thanks, of our gratitude, of our love, an expression of gratitude for the grace that has been given to us. You understand God's heart when you come to this in the plot of the narrative. God is saying to the Israelites, "Listen, I redeemed you out of slavery. I saved you. I was patient with you when you couldn't stop complaining in the wilderness. And then when you made a calf and called it the Lord, I didn't destroy you. I forgave you and recommitted my covenant to you. And so now in this offering, my desire is for your offering, your gift, to come from a heart of gratitude, a heart of thanksgiving, for it to be an expression of love. I'm not requiring a quota of bricks for you to meet. I desire a gift that comes from your heart because of all I've done for you." You see, church, when a heart has been truly touched by the grace of God, you have someone whose life has been transformed by his grace, and in our hearts, when we are aware of the weight of his love and the depths of his mercy and the depths of his grace toward us, that person does not have to be shamed or manipulated or forced to give. That person will be eager to bring an offering of time, an offering of money, an offering in response to the grace and the gifts they have received. This is how God's redeemed community gives. We give in response to what God's given us from willing hearts. Now listen, I want to acknowledge, I'm not implying or denying that discipline is involved in our practice of generosity, because it certainly is, because the reality is that the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, right? And in the weakness of the flesh, there are times and there are seasons when our affections for Christ do not burn as hot. There are moments in our lives, maybe even seasons in our lives, lulls in the Christian life, where we don't feel particularly grateful. We don't feel like bringing an offering But when we're in those seasons of the Christian life, those lulls, those valleys, the right response to that season is not to say, I'm going to wait to be generous until I feel like it. I'm going to withhold my generosity until I get out of this spiritual funk that I have found myself in. No, no. God is honored when in those seasons by faith we discipline ourselves to practice generosity, knowing because of the weakness of the flesh, the reality of the Christian life, that there are times when our desire follows behind our obedience. Okay. So I'm not denying the reality of discipline in our practice of generosity. The point here is that when God's people give, it's not under compulsion. As if our generosity is a necessary tax that we have to pay in order to play in the kingdom of God. Christian giving is always in response to the grace that we've been given first by Him. Together we give from willing hearts in response to God's grace. We'll talk about this more this afternoon. We come back together. We talk about this particular need of debt retirement. But I want you to know our hearts behind this is not to come to you and say, here's your membership tax. Here's how much all of us are gonna have to give. Here's the percentage that you've gotta hit, you know. That's not the spirit. That's not the heart. That's not the intent. The intent is simply to say, this is the need before us. And then this invitation for you to seek the Lord and to give generously, willingly, in response to how the Lord stirs your heart to give. Not out of shame, not out of manipulation, not out of fear, but simply in response to the goodness that God has already shown us as His people. A willing heart. Now, did you notice in the text the diversity and variety of the gifts that were given? It reveals a final truth about how God's people collectively come together and give to meet needs, right? This is number three. Together, we give in accordance to what God has given us. In accordance to what God has given us. It's a beautiful scene in Exodus 35 because, you know, some had yarn to give. I've got yarn. Does this help? Some had wood. Some says, I don't have yarn and wood, but I've got some goats. Here's some animal skins. I've got dye. You know, some members of the community were able to give ample gifts. I've got gold, an offering of gold to give. While other members of the community, they're from an earthly perspective, their gifts were more modest. I don't have gold. But I've got yarn. But each one simply gave in accordance to what God had given them, the blessing that they had received. In other words, the privilege of participating in the ministry of the Lord here was not reserved exclusively for the wealthy. Okay. The one who only had yarn was able to participate as much in the building of the tabernacle as the one who had gold to give. Now, when every member of the community simply gave what they had, to give based upon how God moved in their hearts. God took it all together, all the yarn, the dye, the wood. He took it all together and he made it enough. He made it enough. It's like if you, have you ever seen a, I know you've seen like a mosaic, a beautiful mosaic, and a piece of art that images a beautiful picture, but mosaics are made up of hundreds, sometimes thousands of little individual tiles, right? And each tile is unique. It has its own unique color and texture and sometimes a unique shape. Okay. But when all those unique tiles come together they form this beautiful picture. Separated from the other tiles, it's just a tile. It doesn't image the whole. But when joined together, it fulfills the purpose of displaying this image. This is what God is doing in his redeemed community. God has gifted each one of us with unique skills, unique gifts, even unique and diverse measures of earthly resources, different degrees of means on earth. And whenever there is a need, God invites us to give in accordance to what he has given us. We each bring a variety of different skills and backgrounds and means. Some are able to give ample gifts. Others, at least from an earthly perspective, are only able to give much more modest gifts. Some are in college and living off of ramen. I've been there, a much more modest participation. We're all in different places. We've all been gifted in different ways, but we all give according to what God has given us. And when we do, when every member of the community brings their unique means and gifts and skills together, God makes it enough. God makes it enough. When the tiles come together, the glory of God is seen. He makes it enough for the purposes that he has for us. You ever wonder, like, it would not be an inappropriate or an illogical question to look at the command to build the tabernacle, and God, man, he had some specificity. I want this color of dye. I want these types of skins and this kind of wood. You ever wonder what would happen if Israel just didn't have the resources that God required of them? I know we're familiar with the story, but step back from your familiarity with the story for just a moment and remember, this is a community of slaves. These are impoverished people who have been living in slavery for hundreds of years. It would be almost expected for them to hear from God, we need sapphire gems, and for this call to go out throughout the entire community, word come back, guess what? Nobody's got sapphire. What do we do? Ever wonder what would happen? Thank goodness they had everything they needed. My gosh. Like, what would they have done if they didn't have the resources that was needed for the purposes that God had for them? But how did they get the resources that they had? Do you remember? How did a community of slaves end up with sapphire gems? There's another part earlier in Exodus where it talks about porpoise skins. Where do you get porpoise skins? It's because God went before them as they were coming out of Egypt. We've already read this in the book. He gave them favor in the eyes of their neighbors. I'm going to go across the door, knock on the door. Hey, can I get some gold? Take it and get out, right? God was gracious to the Israelites, went before them and provided them with everything he knew they were going to need for the purposes that he had called them to. Okay. And then when they take up the offering, what are they doing but giving back a portion of what a bunch of slaves had been graciously given by the hand of God. Some had been given evidently a lot. Others knocked on the door of their Israelite or their Egyptian neighbor, and they said, "All I got is some yarn, but you can have it, go." Some had been given a little. But everything they need as a community they had. Okay. Everything we need as a church family for the purposes that God has for our church, every gift, every skill, every idea, every form of craftsmanship, every financial resource and means that we need as MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church for the purposes that God has for our church has already been supplied in the community. God is not going to call us into purposes and not provide the resources we need for the fulfilling of those purposes. We can be confident that if every part of the body simply gives in accordance to what they have received from Egypt, as God stirs in their hearts to give, God's going to take it all, and guess what? It will be enough. It will be enough. And if God does indeed intend for us to pay off this debt by 2030, which is when it's due, we can be confident that he's going to provide through the people of our community, our church, the resources we need to do that. And if he has different purposes in mind, he will have already provided the resources we need for those purposes. In other words, as God's people, we don't have to fear not having enough. Now, in 2030 or in 2050, we don't have to fear not having enough. I fully expect God will lead some from her church to, you've been blessed amply. God has given you means for such a time as this. God will lead, he will stir in some of your hearts to give ample gifts. I'm fully confident that for others, what God puts on your heart to give will be from an earthly perspective more modest. But together we give in accordance to what God has given us. And God is equally glorified in the ample and the modest. Each play an equally important role as a piece of the mosaic in the purposes that God has for us. And when we all simply give as the Lord stirs in our hearts to give in accordance to what he has blessed us and given us, God will make it enough. That's what we're seeing about God's redeemed community in the book of Exodus. Okay. The offering collected in Exodus 35 was to meet a very practical need. They needed to build this earthly tabernacle. But we know God's ultimate desire, this was not ultimately about a portable tent. Okay. Ultimately, God's desire, what this was about, was his glory. His glory being seen and encountered by Israel and seen among the nations. The point of the tabernacle was Israel encountering and exposing the glory of God to the world. Even in the offering, God is ultimately after, not so much of making sure we have enough resources, he's after his own glory. Even in the offering itself, he says, "I'm going to give you resources from the pockets of your oppressors and then invite you to give back a portion of that to me as an expression of gratitude to the glory of my name." It was about his glory, not meeting the particular need ultimately, but reflecting the glory of God. This is our aim when we give, church. It's not ultimately about whatever the need is. The budget, the need, the mortgage. Those things are important. They're real needs. But it's ultimately about displaying and experiencing the glory of God. And that earthly need was simply an opportunity for them to encounter and expose God's glory. The earthly needs we have as a church, God's going to provide for us. But these earthly needs provide opportunities for us to experience and expose His glory. So let's walk in that together. Let's pursue together the glory of God with restful hearts. Let's pursue together the glory of God with willing hearts. Let's pursue the glory of God together. Together. Responding to the need, willingly restful, and in accordance to what God has given us.